Hi, everyone. Welcome to our next episode of the Big Unblock podcast, season 7. We're really excited to have Dr. Strecker with us here today. And Dr. Strecker is the Chief Medical Officer, co-founder of Insight Health, where he's focused on applying artificial intelligence to improve real-world clinical outcomes. He's also a practicing cardiologist and professor of medicine at Oregon Health and Science University. His work sits at the intersection of cardiology, data science, and population health, with a particular emphasis on translating predictive insights into actionable interventions. Dr. Strecker has been a leading voice in how AI can move beyond detection to truly impact prevention and care delivery. And today he's joining us on the Big Unlock podcast to explore how intelligent systems are reshaping the future of cardiovascular care. So with that, a very warm welcome to all our listeners, and I'll hand it over to Dr. Strecker. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Hi, Ritu. Thank you. It's great to be on your podcast. It's really an honor, and you've had some great guests and explored some great topics in the past.
Thank you so much, Dr. Strecker. We're really excited to have this conversation because we just came back from Vive and HIMSS, and AI was everywhere. And also one of the more interesting things that we went to the Cornell Health Tech Summit, and they really talked about wearables and this constant stream of data that's coming in and how that's going to kind of make this, you know, annual physical kind of obsolete. So we would love to hear your thoughts on the future of, you know, continuous cardiac care with wearables and remote monitoring with AI. Love to hear from you. Do you envision a future where cardiology becomes a continuously managed condition? And if so, then how?
I think there's some very exciting possibilities, and I'm glad that you brought up the idea of continuous health management, continuous monitoring, continuous health management.
Yes.
I think that's an area that's created great excitement for many people, and I do think that that is in our future. I think it's important, though, to distinguish that, which is an evolving evidence basis. And so, of course, in clinical medicine, stepping toward my academic cardiologist hat on for a moment, there are a variety of interventions that we can do and monitoring that we can do. And what we emphasize depends on what is the most benefit for patients. And continuous wearables, continuous physiologic data monitoring has some evidence for benefit. And I think that will evolve significantly over time. And it's an area that AI can intersect with very well and very effectively once autonomous AI agents are tested and FDA approved. I do think it's important, though, to recognize that there is a whole set of health interventions that we know are very high impact, very beneficial, that we need to just work on implementation of. We know what to do. We just need to do it. And AI can really improve the care for those things as well immediately right now. We don't need to develop new technology. We don't need to do large clinical trials to show benefit. We have a couple of decades worth of very high quality clinical evidence showing that there's benefit. So just to give you an example, statin medications, cholesterol medications for patients at the high risk of cardiovascular events or who have known heart disease. We know we have hundreds of thousands of patients studied in clinical trials showing significant benefit. Yet identifying patients who would benefit, starting them on the medication and supporting them to ensure that they take the medication as prescribed and don't drop it without the clinician knowing. These are the challenges we face right now, and that results in hundreds of thousands or even millions of additional heart attacks and cardiovascular deaths because we aren't working on that effectively. This is something that today AI can dramatically change and improve without the need for any further study.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Lots to unpack there. And I think, you know, very interesting that you talked about these autonomous AI agents, because I think with Insight Health, you've had a particular success in building, you know, a suite of these agents. So we would love to hear more about that. And I read a news update that you were awarded by OpenAI for, you know, crossing like 1 billion tokens or something. So would love to hear, you know, what's happening there and what that news was about.
Yeah, thank you. I wish Saran, our CTO, one of our other co-founders and CTO, was on. He posted something. By the time we got the placard for a billion tokens, we use multiple models, by the way, but for OpenAI, a billion tokens or something like that, I think we'd crossed the 10 billion threshold. So we have to look up his LinkedIn post. So anyway, by the time it got to us in the mail, we'd already gone 10 times that. So just to back up a moment, and the idea for our company, we have four excellent co-founders, which is a little unique to have four rather than two or three. We have four excellent co-founders. Two of us are mid-career physicians. So we've been practicing clinical medicine for some time, and we continue to do so. We've obviously had to scale back significantly in order to build this company, but we love clinical medicine. And our goal for starting this company was to remove the roadblocks and allow us to really have much more impact for patients in a much less painful way, frankly. So many speed bumps and potholes in the clinical care delivery system. So the idea for this company came about when another co-founder, Pankaj Gore, he's our other chief medical officer, and I, we'd go for weekly runs every Saturday morning, rain or shine. In the Pacific Northwest, it's a lot of rain in the winter, of course. Yeah. And I remember it was early December, dark, rainy, cold, probably 45 degrees. And this was 2022, and ChatGPT had just burst into the public consciousness. And Pankaj said, this will transform medicine, this technology. We were not in the tech world. We are not CS folks. So it kind of took us by surprise as well. So this will transform medicine. We have to be involved and help to guide this. Doctors do in general, and then we specifically. So that was the genesis. And we were then connected. His brother is a Silicon Valley entrepreneur and a lot of contacts, and connected us with Jay Malzoni and then ultimately with Saran Siva. And we created the company. And within 6 or 8 months, we had, to our knowledge, the first autonomous interaction with a patient in real clinical practice. And this is a specialist practice, which has been our initial focus. And there's a lot of great technology being developed. And Google, for instance, that we subsequently found out is doing some really great work, of course, and was at that time. But I think because it's being driven on the tech end rather than the clinical medicine end, at that time, to my knowledge, they were using patient actors to do the scenarios. And they're working on the clinical intelligence end of it and using the whole stack. But they're using patient actors to give symptoms and that sort of thing. We understood that interacting with the patient and offloading in an intelligent fashion, which AI can do, and can offload a lot of the work and allow patients more time to be able to discuss their condition, talk about their symptoms, even ask within guardrails, ask certain questions. We knew the technology could do that. And we knew that that was a big part of what the benefit in clinical medicine for clinicians and patients would be. Right. And so that's what we focused on. And we were confident enough with our clinical experience and with our technological experience via our other two co-founders that we could make this work. Now, of course, in the first example, we actually had a nurse sitting with the patient in the clinic doing it. So about the first week, there was a nurse right next to the patient. And then we recognized, okay, this is working. This can do it. Let's release it and let patients do it in their own homes prior to this. So anyway, that was the genesis of this. And since then, we've built out a suite of autonomous AI agents that can act to interact with patients, that can review information, it can review referrals, it can review prior authorizations, it can summarize the clinical encounter. You're very familiar with AI scribes, I'm sure. It can reach out to patients after the visit. So all of these are orchestrated via some sophisticated technology and allows for a much more AI intensive experience that still feels very comfortable for the patient and for clinicians.
That's really interesting, because we keep hearing about this, that AI, actually just augments humans. So what do you think, what has your experience been with, in reality, how you feel, are we over-romanticizing human in the loop? And at what point does AI need to take more autonomous decision-making? And like you said, you kind of thought that then you could even take away the nurse because AI was, fully capable of handling it on its own. So yeah, would love to hear more about your thoughts on that.
I think you raise a couple of excellent points. I would divide autonomous action from decision-making. Okay. I think those are two separate things. They are often conflated, understandably so. But the reason I separate them is because once you move into the world of AI making clinical decisions, diagnoses, orders that without a human in the loop, it requires a lot of technologic work. It requires on both the fundamental technology operations as well as the AI safety assurance overlay layer. Mm-hmm. It requires a ton of clinical validation, testing, and oversight. It's very important. And I think we do not have enough clinicians. We do not have enough specialists or primary care. So it's very important to move in that direction. That's very difficult. And the other half of it that makes it a challenge is that trust is patient trust and healthcare worker trust. The other people who would be working alongside the autonomous decision-making AI within the healthcare ecosystem. So most important, of course, is patients. They're the center. They're the reason that we deliver healthcare. So autonomous decision-making is very important, will come, needs to be developed. But I think we should avoid an excessive focus on that because there's so much low-lying fruit for us to pick right now to improve care by implementing with autonomous action. And there's also appropriate debate about, is AI really saving people? Like, to what degree is it really saving clinicians' work? You know, are they just having to look through more data generated by AI Scribe? Are they having to double check for hallucinations and all these sorts of things? So the answer to that is absolutely well-designed, well-implemented. AI can act autonomously in a way that really improves the clinician experience and the patient experience. It has to be done well. But that's something we can and are doing right now. And I think there's so much benefit. And by benefit, I don't just mean healthcare efficiency with the financial ramifications, positive financial ramifications for health systems, payers, that sort of thing. But I also mean patient outcomes, patients reducing death and disability from disease. Again, we know what we need to do. We need to diagnose high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. We need to prescribe appropriate medications. We need to support the patients. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you were started on new medicine and every time you were started on a new medication, you got a check-in from a nurse, whether that's an AI nurse or a real nurse. And they contact you and say, hey, did you fill that prescription? How's it going? Are you having any side effects? Do you have any questions? Mm-hmm. And then what would you like me to check in with you again? If so, when? You know, in a week, a month, what? If you say yes, yeah, check in with me in a month. Check back in. If the month's still on, it's still taking the medication, is that okay? Just that action can dramatically reduce the mortality of middle-aged and elderly people in the United States. Just diagnosing high blood pressure, suggesting the correct medication for a clinician to start, and then checking in with the patient. This is not a going to sending rocket ships to Mars kind of thing. This is, we can do this right now. In fact, we do this right now.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very important distinction that you've made, you know, about the autonomous action versus the autonomous decision. So that's something to really think about. So thank you for clarifying that to us. But that leads, you know, directly into the next question, which you made the very, you know, correct point about ambient and other things, that it's generating more data or, you know, more cognitive load on the clinicians. So we all know that AI can generate, you know, a flood of alerts, risk scores, predictions, you know, more and more and more information. So what do you think about the signal to noise problem where you have to ensure that AI is surfacing the right interventions without overwhelming the clinicians or the patients? If you're constantly, you know, checking in even with the patient, and, you know, at what point do you kind of decide how much is enough and keep it in check, so to speak?
That's absolutely right. Another great insight. And using that example, if you're checking in, let's say that oncologic issue and you're checking in with patients weekly, if you generate a 3/4 page summary every time you check in with a patient in the oncology practice and push that into the EHR, somebody's then got to look at it and decide what to do. And so
exactly,
you're absolutely right. This is where having clinicians involved in technology development and implementation is critical. Mm-hmm. And I would emphasize, you know, so for instance, Dr. Gore and I are mid-career. We've been attending physicians for 15, 16, 17 years, something like that. We have a lot of experience in clinical medicine. Mm-hmm. And we still love it. And we're not, this is not our exit. we're making our ecosystem better and still love it. And so I think involving clinicians in a meaningful way in the technology development and implementation, not just as, you know, chief medical officers with a couple consulting meetings, you know, here and there, but actually integrating clinicians into the development of the product and its ultimate implementation technology, that's really going to be essential, because that is exactly what you raise. Will be highlighted immediately. You know, hang on. So what's happening? You're checking in, you know, twice a week with this patient. Okay, how do we manage that information? It only escalate things that are medical flags. We need to have protocol to understand what is routine symptom response and questions and whatever, and not create unnecessary documentation on that. Maybe this can be a flow. Maybe this can be a dashboard, you know, blah, blah, blah. So involving experienced clinicians is the key. And if you just leave this to people who have gotten an MD but never practiced, or only to technology developers, the issues you highlight will be a major problem. They are still a problem. I don't want to whitewash this. It's, you know, the technology advances so fast that sometimes we need to catch up. And having AI scribes documentation that's too much, you know, if it's 2 pages of documentation, there's some advantages for that. Maybe some clinicians want that, but many, it creates a huge cognitive load for a lot of other clinicians. And so, you know, you really need to understand and have more abbreviated summaries and just highlight key things. And this is just the example of a very simple feature of the technology ASPRA. You also raised the idea of overload from alerts. Alert fatigue is extremely well documented and a problem. I think the field of medicine has, as we've evolved, this is a huge issue when EHRs first came out. I'm old enough, sadly, to remember when there was still paper, believe it or not, when I was in medical school. But EHRs came out, everybody was splashing alerts everywhere. Everybody just clicks, okay, you just got to get through it. You know, defer, defer, okay, whatever. Just you got to take care of the patient. You can't be dealing with all these alerts. So that issue is better understood, but we may be entering an era with AI technology development where we need to relearn that lesson. I hope not. And again, if the more we have clinicians, experienced clinicians evolve, the quicker we'll learn that lesson.
Great. So you said, you know, it was really interesting to hear that you're mid-career and you really enjoy your, you know, medicine. And that reminded me that we usually always start the podcast with an origin story about how you got into healthcare, but we didn't do that this time. So we would love to hear how you got into this and, you know, how did you choose cardiology and like what brought you to this field? And also the intersection of, you know, technology and healthcare, like how did you get interested in that? And it's always so nice to hear from doctors because I think you really bring like a unique perspective because you're there every day and you know what needs to work. So we would love to hear more about, you know, your perspective on that.
Well, thank you. And I'm sure you get good answers. Everybody loves to talk about themselves. I try to keep it short and I tell you about my parents. My father's an engineer and my mother's a social worker. And it kind of, I am an amalgamation of those two kinds of ways of thinking. And that's really a great fit for medicine, thoroughly analytic and also to have that interactive and social sense and insight that a social worker has. And the reason I got into cardiology is, unfortunately, a strength of mine is not memorization. So, you know, most doctors, most people in medical school are, to get into medical school, you are generally an excellent memorizer. And I'm kind of like an average memorizer for like an average smart person. But as compared to the average medical student, I'm a bad memorizer. So I was really kind of dismayed in the first couple of years of medical school. Oh, you're memorizing all these lists and your grade is dependent on how many lists of 10 to 12 things you can memorize. And I did well, but it was painful. What I loved, I found, though, was physiology. So systems, how they work together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that physiology, I would really understand quickly, and I would remember very well, could integrate into practice. I got into my third and fourth year. Unfortunately, I recognize that cardiology is rich with physiology, and also you can have a major impact on patients' health and longevity, and there are interesting procedures, depending which specialty you're involved in. So for all those reasons, I gravitated to cardiology and ultimately electrophysiology. And then I've always had my father worked at an engineering company, and I did when Oracle first came out, believe it or not, or at least was first available to consumers. We got Oracle, it was floppy disks and list of manuals or shelf of manuals, like 2 feet long. I learned Oracle. I went and worked for my dad's company and created SQL databases. You know, that kind of gave me the flavor of technology or a sense of technology. And I never really pursued it beyond that. I didn't do programming. I didn't get a CS undergrad degree or anything like that. But it kept me interested and involved. And ultimately, again, that's how Pankaj Gore and I thought of the idea and then contacted our other two co-founders to set up the company.
Very interesting. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us, Dr. Strecker. Okay. And we can talk more about technology. Do you think the role of the cardiologist is going to get redefined in the AI world as AI takes on more diagnostic and predictive tasks? You know, what are your thoughts there? How do you think you need to evolve to keep up with this wave of technology that's coming in and almost threatening to like overwhelm a lot of specialties and, you know, healthcare in general?
I sure hope that will absolutely happen. My hope is that clinicians do not, and patients do not need to evolve too much, that the main issue is establishing comfort and some level of trust when warranted with the implementation of technology, but that the technology can fit, unlike in the past, EHRs of 15 years ago or right now, frankly, that the technology can fit around the current experience and improve it dramatically. And so an example of that is our autonomous AI agents that reach out to patients before visits to get their basic medical history, understanding of their patient with pain syndrome, to understand all the details, the nature of their pain and prior treatments. If they're a cardiology patient, you know, to understand what procedures they've had done, where they've had them done, what they're seeing. All of this can happen, you know, at 2 a.m. if patient's a shift worker or something, you know, at 2 a.m. in their own home. It doesn't have to happen when they're sitting in the waiting room or and then all of the questions that the doctor or nurse may ask at the beginning of the visit. So all this can happen in the comfort of the patient's own home. And so that's an example for me of how technology can be made to work more effectively and can work around the needs of the patient.
So meeting the patient where they are rather than having the patient come in to you. So when you talk about these autonomous agents, are you specifically talking about voice agents or how are they operating?
Any modality. So there are voice agents, just telephone. So you call up and talk with a very natural sounding AI agent by voice only. You can do text-based interactions. Our company has technology we call visual voice, where it's, you know, it's, you can see it like a, as if you were texting on your phone as you're speaking and as the AI is communicating with you. It can also then pull into that stream videos, for instance, instructional videos. An example of which is, say you're getting a rhythm monitor. I'm an electrophysiologist. I deal with arrhythmia. So frequently send out rhythm monitors. There's a company that can just send it straight to your home and you can learn how to put it on yourself. It has instructions. But if you don't know how, or visual voice can show you a video right there. Okay, put it over here, do this, click that. So it can really make, you know, if they'll go and look it up on the internet or call a 1-800 number to get help. So there's many different interactive modalities. And again, this fits with the theme of trying to make this most accessible, as maximally accessible to patients as possible, because that's going to promote their engagement with their health and with doing what we know will promote longevity and health.
So with all the implementations that you've seen so far, you know, with Insight Health, have you seen particular success in some particular category, or you think generally agents are successful in terms of reaching?
Yeah, we have seen a lot of success. I'm just thinking across areas. And I think it depends, it very much depends on the practice. So whether it's a mid-sized clinic versus an insurer versus a small or large health system, the needs will be very different for each. And again, this is the strength of, as they say, the tech stack. I haven't used much tech jargon so far. The varied and deep tech stack that we've developed, you know, we can fit any kinds of needs. And so, you know, one example, again, in keeping with public health, I have a master's in public health as well. In keeping with public health, there is this well-established set of activities, preventive activities. So, you know, colorectal cancer screening, colonoscopies or stool-based testing or blood-based testing for colon cancer, breast cancer screening, or checking for cholesterol, checking blood sugars. These sorts of things are very well established as being beneficial, but it's very challenging for payers, for insurers, even when they're very motivated and there are alignments with, you know, with they could get bonuses for good care if they're part of Medicare plans and that sort of thing. But payers have a challenge in transmitting this down into the health systems and the clinics and to the patients. So they can see these gaps in care where, say, 50% of patients are not getting colorectal cancer screening, and therefore the death from colon cancer is much higher among their panel than it should be. But they have limited ways of intervening on that. Our technology can do that. It can screen, it can then reach out to the patient, it can assess their interest in getting colorectal cancer screening, it can educate them about it, it can then assess what they prefer. Would they prefer to get a colonoscopy? Would they prefer to do a home stool-based test? Would they prefer to get a blood-based test? And then it can actually arrange for that, extend it out to them, or it can schedule the colonoscopy, it can screen whether they need to see a gastroenterologist first or just go straight to a colonoscopy. And if they can go straight to colonoscopy, it can actually schedule that and arrange prep. So it's, for me, the most impactful is the things that impact public health, population health. But I recognize that for each clinic and each clinician, there's different pain points in their practice, and we can insert into any of those.
Great. Time's flown by and we're almost at the end of the podcast. So it's been a great discussion. Thank you so much, Dr. Strecker. Any last thoughts or closing advice you would like to share with our listeners before we wrap?
You know, I know you've got a sophisticated audience, and I think that it's important for them to realize that as we progress along the autonomous action to autonomous decision making, it's going to be critically important to engage the workers within their organization to make sure that it's implemented well and that there's trust involved. And then, of course, ultimately the patients. The further upstream we are from that, the less important that is. If it's just point solutions that are working on the back end of the healthcare ecosystem, you know, that's pretty easy. If it's patient facing, then I think it's really important to work with experienced folks who can do it well. And then as we progress to the world you've talked about with autonomous decision making, wearables and constant delivery, as a society, we'll really need to start working through and accept that as a society before that can gain traction.
Yeah, might be happening sooner than we realize.
It will be. It certainly will be.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Strecker. Been a pleasure having you on our podcast. Thank you so much.
You too. It's been a great time.